818-985-5735. That is 818-985-5735. Peace and love.
This is Mumia Abu-Jamal, and you're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles and 98.7 Santa Barbara.
From the icy cold curves of Angeles Crest to the sunny shores of PCH, this is The Car Show, broadcasting every Saturday here on KPFK 90.7 FM for over 50 years. I am your humble host, Mark Vaughn from AutoWeek.com. Just go to AutoWeek.com, click on my articles, and put nice comments at the bottom. Thank you. That's all I ask. I am joined this week and every week by my favorite co-host in the world, our Orange County Bureau Chief, a practicing attorney, and the owner of not one, but two Mazdas, a Miata, and an RX-8, Michelle Spencer. Welcome, Michelle.
Oh, hey, Mark. Great to be here again with you to talk about all the car stuff going on in Southern California.
And we are lucky today. We have a car expert, an analyst, a journalist, and a guy with a curriculum vitae as long as the quarter mile, which is the same distance by which he lives his life. Our always welcome guest this week has a resume that long. He has held numerous roles in the automotive publishing world over the past 30 years, including staff writer at Super Street Magazine, editor-in-chief at Edmunds.com, and executive publisher for Kelley Blue Book and Auto Trader. He's currently, I'm in the middle of this, I'm only halfway through. He's currently the executive analyst at ICCars.com, and as well as a Forbes contributor and member of both the North American Car of the Year and World Car of the Year's juries. And this is the last one, he produces weekly road tests for his own YouTube channel, Carl Brower Cars. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Carl Brower.
I don't know what to say. I feel like there's nothing I can say to live up to all that. Thanks, Mark. No pressure.
Okay. Yeah. If you're ever on again, I'm cutting that down to about 10 words. So choose whichever 10 you want. And we will gladly include them this week. And for the next couple of weeks, as you know, is the KPFK Winter Fun Drive. We are asking for your support. You get to listen to this all year long. We have to produce it for you. And there's a lot of things we need. Michelle, weren't you telling me about what they need up there on top of Mount Wilson?
Yes. Did you know that we broadcast from the top of Mount Wilson? And this has been going on since 1964. And KPFK has told us that they bought a solid state transmitter in 2012 to replace one of their aging dual vacuum tube transmitters. Well, they got a second one in early 2014. And guess what? They're getting old.
They need new stuff, new equipment.
Yes, they need new replacement parts, and that they are worried that they're going to fail at any time. And so they're asking the public to please donate to obtain replacement parts for the two transmitters. If you'd like to make a donation, you can go to kpfk.org or call their donation line. The number is 818-985-5735.
Yeah, we have all got that number tattooed on our foreheads. We need it. 818-985-5735, or go to kpfk.org and help support the broadcasting and journalism that you enjoy from KPFK year round. We really need it. We're not begging. Don't make us beg. Okay, I'm begging. Please send some money. You've got a bunch of money sitting around. You're going to send like a sweater to Uncle Fred. You hate Uncle Fred. Don't give him a sweater this year. He hates the sweater. Send the money to us. Call 818-985-5735 or go to kpfk.org. You don't even have to talk to someone if you go to the kpfk.org website. So that's always a plus.
Right. So you can just sign over your aging Lancia to KPFK.
Yes.
They would gladly take it, sell it off somewhere, and use the money.
It's a collector car. It is a collector car. Yes. Okay. And one sad note, one sad memorial, this show, in fact, just I think it was 5 years ago, last week or the week before, our dear friend and the longtime host of this show, Art Gould, passed away 5 years ago today. So we want to just say, Art, whatever you're racing around up there, I know it's probably, I bet it's a Pontiac Firebird, something like that. He seemed to have a proclivity for those. But anyway, calendar items. Let's move right on. Art always had a list of calendar items on his yellow legal pad. That's where he read them off from that. We have moved up to the sophisticated Google Doc, which I guess in some ways it is really good. Let's start right out right here in the city of Glendale. Up until 4 o'clock today, the city of Glendale has an EV test drive event, the electric car and bike test drive event. The location is Glendale City Hall. It's still going on. You can get down there if you happen to be anywhere near Glendale by 4 o'clock. If you want to check out some of these electric cars, if you've never driven one, you want to see what it's like to drive one, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. They have available the most up-to-date list that we have: Tesla Model Y, Tesla Cybertruck, Hyundai Ioniq 5, Ford F-150 Lightning. Now, registration is required to test drive the EV, so you can register at the website. Michelle, here it is. I see it. gwp.evnavigator.com/EV drive, and then they add .html. I don't know if that's really necessary to add that. But anyway, we're looking forward to hopefully hearing from some of you guys who went out there and got your first test drive of an electric car. Carl, I know you had an electric car. You had a Fiat 500e. You were paying $69 a month for that?
$49 a month.
It's absurd. So do you recommend electric cars?
I recommend electric cars when they make sense. And in some circumstances, they make complete sense. They are undeniably the best car. Like that Fiat 500e. I mean, when you're just running around South Orange County, like my wife was in it for 3 years, putting on 23,000 miles, it was perfect for $49 a month. Couldn't be beat. And she still had an internal combustion vehicle sitting there waiting to serve for longer drives because that only had about 100-mile range. So if you can make an EV work for you and you can find a good price on them, those are kind of two big ifs. But if you can, they're great.
We just got back our Mitsubishi IMEV, which we have owned its entire life. We bought it in 2011, the first one here in the U.S. It was up doing college student driving duty, and it is back now. And I just love that little thing. I was out. I topped up the air pressure and all the tires and even washed the windshield on that thing. And it has 103,000 miles on it. It says on its second big battery, and I'm just going to drive that. They're going to bury me in that thing. So it wasn't that the Vikings used to bury their heroes in Saabs. They put them in a Saab and pushed it out into the bay. And that's what I want. That's what I want.
Okay. Except right. I don't know if they'll like all that lead acid battery, lithium battery in going into the water, but whatever. That's okay.
Vikings weren't known for thinking.
Well, we can remove it for the fish.
Okay. We'll pull the battery and we'll
remove the lead acid battery.
And we'll put you in that same spot. We'll just put you where the battery was, Mark, and we'll push the car into the water.
Because you won't fit in the frunk.
All right. We got other things going on. We got so much to get through here. Motor 4 Toys Charity Car Show and Toy Drive tomorrow, Sunday, December 8th, 6:30 a.m. to 12 noon at L.A. Pierce College. That is at 6201 Winnetka Avenue, Woodland Hills. But take the Victory Boulevard and Mason entrances to get in there. Don't believe your Google Maps because they'll send you to the other side of campus. Admission for that is one or more unwrapped toys worth $20 or more. Go to www. This doesn't have HTML, but it has the W's. Motor4toys.com. Four is a number four. And if you're out in Brea, we're going to try and hit one event everywhere here. Brea Holiday Car Show is also accepting chips for kids toys. And that's Sunday, December 8th, tomorrow, 10 to 4 Birch Street in downtown Brea. Anybody going to, have any of us been to the American Honda Collection Hall Cars, Bikes, and Coffee?
I'm embarrassed to say I have not, because it's really not that far from me, and it always sounds really fun, and I have yet to make it up to one of those.
It is going on December 14th, so that's a week from today, on Saturday, December 14th, 7:30 a.m. to 12 noon at Honda headquarters in Torrance. The theme is clubs and community. That's like a Rose Bowl float theme. You know, what does it mean? I don't know what it means. I guess there are going to be some car clubs there. So they're reaching out to car clubs, building the community of car enthusiasts. It's a free, family-friendly automobile and motorcycle enthusiast gathering and themed show. Should be lots of fun down there. Toy Drive, in collaboration with the City of Torrance, is also happening for them. Bring an unwrapped toy and have a good time. The address is 1919 Torrance Boulevard. Enter off of Harper's. It says Harper's Way. I thought it was Harper Way. But anyway, HondaCollectionHall.com. Michelle, you love Irwindale. How many events are left on the Irwindale calendar? Oh, it looks like Moon Eyes is going on right now.
Right.
But I don't think, if you're out driving around, you happen to be on the near the 605 and the 210, you might be able to still catch the tail end of the Moon Eyes Christmas party. Uh-huh. But what is coming up after that, Michelle?
Well, one more item, and then they're closing it down forever and letting the developers have at it like wolves. Okay. The final farewell party.
These are business people, Michelle. This is business. It's not personal. It's business.
All right, vultures.
okay.
December 21st is their final farewell party, and this is going to be another all-day event. And you can get your farewell party tickets at IrwindaleSpeedway.com. You'll get access to the pits for the first time ever, so that you can go and get your autographs, take photos for the very last time of your favorite racers. They're going to have drift racing. They're going to have Arca Menards racing. They're going to have what else? Pro late models, modifieds, jet car burn downs, and of course, my favorite, trailer races.
Yeah.
RV auto soccer. All right. Has anyone ever seen cool. RV auto soccer? I mean, come on.
Yeah, they did that on what was that British car show?
Top Gear.
Top Gear. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. And then they're going to have fireworks after all that is over. And hopefully it'll be a blast. So yeah. That's it. Then they're going to close it down at the end of the year.
That's the last event. Now, they have said, I don't know, about four or five times they've said, oh, we're going out of business. We mean it, man. And they don't go out of business. So I am a bit reticent to promote this as the final farewell party, but that's the name of it. Maybe I'm too cynical, but like I say, they have cried wolf, I think, four or five times so far. So
maybe someone will swoop in and bail the whole thing out.
Maybe like we're hoping that our listeners swoop in and bail us out by donating to kpfk.org or calling 818-985-5735. Please don't be shy. Give us your money. We still have more calendar events here. What do we have? Do we want to talk about our buddy Dave Wolin?
Well, of course. We'll give him a plug because Dave went on and shared our promo on Facebook. So, yes, Dave, you get extra points here from the car show.
Did Dave give us any money?
Crickets.
No, we don't know. Maybe he did. Well, he's a good guy. He's, as we said last week, he's a former Can-Am racer. He is a prolific author, has written a bunch of books about Riverside, Ascot, and other California racetrack histories. And those books will all be available. You can meet Dave Wolin at Auto Books, Aero Books in Burbank, Saturday, December 14th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Auto Books, Aero Books is located at 2900 Magnolia Boulevard. And Dave will be signing copies of his new book, 50 Years of Speed, the Long Beach Grand Prix. When was everybody's first Long Beach Grand Prix?
Oh, gosh. Probably about 20 years ago for me. Not that long, I guess, relative to 50 years.
Yeah. I was there in the 70s. I don't remember which one. But we rode motorcycles over the Vincent Thomas Bridge, found free parking, and found a way to get into the race. And it was fascinating to me. I was just amazed. You know, Formula One was the epitome of what technology of suave, debonair, European elegance. And these guys were all racing right there, right in front of us. Chris Pook brought it all to us at Long Beach. And so there you go. Long Beach memories. And Michelle, you've been there, I'm sure, a number of times. All right.
Yep, from the area. So, yeah, of course.
All right. What else? There's a 356 deal going on. Porsches.
I know. Yeah, for my Porsche people. So the annual 356 Club is doing the cruise in at the Peterson on Sunday, December 15th. And roll-in time is 8 a.m. and roll-out 11 a.m. at 6080 Wilshire Boulevard, as always. This is the fourth year of the 356 Club holding its cruise in. But you do not have to have a 356 in order to participate. That's just the show area. All Porsches are welcome. So you do need to get a ticket if you want to show your car. But if you just want to spectate, you do not have to.
Not 924s, right? I mean, they're not letting them in.
I don't think those aren't allowed at any Porsche event these days.
Well, all right.
We're going to hear from I have driven a 924 since buying it new. Mm-hmm. And when were those available? I don't even remember.
See, you guys realize the 924 guys and the Mustang 2 guys and the Pontiac Aztec guys, they're all going to join together and come and storm the studio.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
all 14 of them combined.
Yes. So navigate over to peterson.org/events, and that's where you'll find your sign up if you'd like to show your 356.
And while you're there, navigate over to kpfk.org and make a healthy donation. We could really use it. If you want to talk to somebody, call 818-985-5735 and keep the airwaves live. So looking forward to that. There's something else at the Peterson.
Yeah. As I was getting the info for the 356 cruise in, I saw that there was a promo for the Gingerbread Garage Workshop, not Gingerbread House. And they had the cutest little thing on the Peterson website page for this. And it shows a little, Hot Wheels car coming out of a gingerbread garage that obviously a six-year-old put together.
That's cute.
Anywho, that's running from 12/16 through December 20th. And you have to have general admission to the museum in order to do this. Go ahead and go to peterson.org/events and you'll see the Gingerbread Garage promo page and learn a little bit more about it and show up. It's between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. Now you get your admission and then just show up whenever you want to do the build.
Okay. I saw Gingerbread and I didn't read the garage thing. So it is car related. That's clever, huh?
I think I might make one of those because I got some inspiration from this.
And all the thing I like is that all the supplies are provided, including candy, icing, and graham crackers. So,
yeah.
And our holiday helpers will be on hand to guide you through a sugary construction process, ensuring a positive experience for all ages. Doesn't that just warm the cockles of your heart? And what are cockles anyway? Does anybody know?
Don't even say that on the air.
Can we say that? Oh,
I think
sorry.
I think that's an FCC violation.
Sorry, FCC. yeah. Well, speaking of FCC, no, this is not a bridge. This is not a segue. Send generous donations to keep KPFK on the air. 818-985-5735. We need your help. We need your financial support. You get the benefit of KPFK all year long. There are some wonderful, I mean, we do our best to cover the car world here, but there are a lot of shows that bring you news that you won't get anywhere else in the world. The show just before ours is called Spotlight Africa. And I listen to that, sometimes when I'm on the way into the studio or whatever. And I learned something. I said, what? There's another perspective on this? I had no idea. And you hear from people who are involved in the many countries that make up Africa. That's just one show. The show After Hours Bill Garner with Rhapsody in Black, wonderful music that you never knew that you loved. That's a two-hour show. You get that. You get all this for free. So all we're asking you to do is help keep the show and the shows on the air by calling 818-985-5735. As they say, operators are standing by. If you don't want to talk to anybody, and I understand that, go to kpfk.org and you can make your donation just with a couple of clicks of a couple of buttons. And if you do it right now, if you do it on this show, then the car show gets credit for it. And when they're going down the list and they're saying, hey, which one do we want to cut? You know, it won't be us. It'll be somebody else. You're going to make donations. Check, as we always say, as Michelle requires us to say, the show's attorney, check with your tax preparer to see if donating to KPFK is
tax deductible.
Tax deductible, yes. I think it is, but I'm not your attorney. Check with your tax preparer.
Tax professional.
But in any case, it's a good cause, and we would greatly appreciate your support.
You want to stay on the air for another 50-plus years.
That's right, 50-plus years. KPFK, I think, they started in 1959 is when the station started. It was part of the Pacifica, it still is part of the Pacifica network, and they have been on the air without commercial support. So you don't have to listen to commercials here. Just every now and then we come on and we ask you for your support in the form of a nice, generous financial donation, which you got to make some financial donations before the year is up. So do it here at KPFK, support during the car show. Call 818-985-5735 or go to kpfk.org. And we are going to go to the news. And what we had a big discussion here about what we were going to do first. What do we want to do first? I think we want to do Michelle's story. We're going to follow up because last week we told you we couldn't tell you about the Jaguar craziness because it was all under embargo. Well, the embargo lifted, and all week long, everybody has been, you know, outraging on the internets. What is it that they're so upset about, Michelle? Tell us.
Yes, the Jaguar Type 00 has been revealed to the world. Now, last week, as Mark mentioned, all we had was a spy photo with the camo print on it. Well, the camo print is off. And guess what was underneath? Pepto-Bismol pink. Yay.
And blue.
There was a blue one. Yeah, I liked the blue one. Now, interesting choice of making the focal point of all the stock photography and footage, the pink one. But they said there was a reason for that. And that's because the reveal was in Miami and they felt really keyed into the whole Miami vibe. So here we are. The reveal was on December 2nd during
what
Miami
do they
Art
describe,
Week.
Describe what they look like, because this is radio. We've seen them, and so we have this vision in our head. But,
sure.
For those listening, what does it look like?
Here's what I think they were going for. I think they were going for, it's a sedan, but I think they were trying to make it look like a Bentley or a Rolls Royce.
Okay. I kind of saw a swoopy roofline. I mean, I don't know. In my vision, it was a little bit of the proportions of the E-Type, or am I crazy? It was It was an E-Type with sharper lines, sharper creases.
Yeah. And that rear end. Can we talk about that?
Yes.
The whole thing is a horizontal grill, or a pattern that looks like a horizontal grill. Very flat. Where's the bumper? I don't know, but it is a concept car.
Okay.
So we don't have tailpipes. We don't have anything, but it's supposed to be an EV, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I thought I was expecting it to be really terrible. And judging by that commercial that they released with all the crazy people, it was like it's like Dr. Seuss took the wrong meds and started doing another book, you know, that's like Bosco Builds a Car or something. It looked like it was going to be terrible. So prepping my brain for something terrible, it's not that bad. They call it a dramatic exterior. Right. Mm-hmm. Have you seen them? I sure you've seen them, Carl, right?
Yeah, I saw them. I felt like it's clear that to me, Jaguar is trying to figure out what to do with itself, right? Their sales were, I think they peaked in like 2017 or something like that. And they've fallen by 70% since then. They're less than a third of what their sales were 6 or 8 years ago. And the world's gone big, chunky, upright SUV and also EV. And I don't think anyone associates either of those concepts, big, chunky, upright, and electric, with Jaguar, despite the I-Pace that's been around for a while. So they're trying to remain viable. And certainly that's always a worthwhile effort. But I also feel like when you have brand equity like they've established, you know, Jaguar, everyone knows Jaguar. And I think most people have a positive affiliation with that term, with that brand. And I feel like they kind of threw it all away. And it's like, you know, their whole point of their marketing campaign is, we're not going to be restrained by our past. It's like, well, you should maybe be a little restrained. Your past is kind of cool. There's a lot of cool stuff in your past. So
I agree. This thing's supposed to be available in about a year, at the end of 2025. They are going to build it in the UK, of course, as always. So they are keeping to that tradition, at least. But we will see what the concept car ends up being in a prototype or a production car.
Another important thing about this development is that they are, what, tripling the price of a Jaguar now? I forget what exactly the price was, but they're competing in their minds with Bentley and Rolls-Royce. Is that about right?
That is about right. Yeah, they want to go ultra luxury.
I think what they're going to try to do is like find a niche in there. Like, kind of, if people remember 20 years ago, Bentley came out with the new Continental GT. That was kind of the first new Bentley under the Volkswagen group. Very successful. And it was successful because it was a very beautiful car that was actually far less expensive than what most people thought of as Rolls-Royce Bentley pricing. So it was more than like a high-end Mercedes, but it was less than a Rolls-Royce. The more I think about it, the more I think that's exactly what Jaguar is doing. I feel like it's like, we're going to do the more expensive than mainstream luxury cars, but a chunk less than niche luxury cars like Rolls-Royces and even Bentleys. Now Bentleys are more expensive now. And so we're going to look like this high value $150,000 car or something like that. I think that's what they're going to do.
Is that the price that they were throwing around, or did they say?
I thought it was like I heard 125 or 150 was like the starting price for them.
Or was that, that might have been media speculation, because I don't
maybe that was speculation.
I don't think they gave a price on it, but they did give a range, a competitive set. And so that's a big leap for the Leaping Cat.
Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah.
So anyway, we're going to make a big leap to our next topic, because Carl is he works at iccars.com as an analyst, and among his many other activities. And they keep coming up with, they have data. They have access to millions of transactions and all kinds of data on cars. And this this one would have been, this is a bit scary, Carl. Tell us what your latest data bit is.
Yeah, this is the most dangerous cars study that we did. And essentially what we did was, I'm just going to read to you the one little paragraph right here I've got in front of me to make sure I get it right. But IC Cars analyzed fatality data from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, also known as NHTSA. They have a fatality analysis reporting system, FARS it's known as, of model year 2018 through 2022 cars with car crashes that resulted in at least one occupant fatality, to identify the most dangerous vehicles on U.S. roads today. So essentially, we looked at how many accidents these cars were in, and how many times, because of those accidents, at least one occupant in the vehicle passed away. And then we kind of normalized it with miles traveled. And so it's all this data science stuff. It can easily get buried in the weeds with it, but we have a smart data group.
Before we start naming names, because Michelle is our staff attorney, we must say that this does not necessarily causation does not, what's the term?
Correlation is not causation.
It's not causation. So if you have one of these cars, it doesn't mean you're going to die this afternoon. Okay.
Right.
And the actual numbers of fatalities per brand are relatively small, or what? How would you term that, Carl?
Well, it's fatality accident rates, cars per billion vehicle miles traveled. So, you know, we took the aggregate of all the miles that these cars are traveling. And that means that while these rates we're going to talk about exist, the chances of any one person in a car, any of these cars, having a fatality is super small.
Okay. So what does that tell? What are the names of the cars? Name names, I guess.
Sure. It's time to name names. So the first car, the most dangerous car, was the Hyundai Venue. And if you know Hyundai, you know that that's essentially their entry-level car. So it's their smallest car. And everyone who knows anything about safety and car accidents knows that small car, when small car and bigger car get in an accident, small car loses. Okay. That's just the way it is. So there's no getting around this. This is physics. It doesn't really matter how well you design a car. If you have a small little car and a much bigger car hits you, you're going to be in more chance. You're going to have more risk than the guy in the bigger car. So that little Hyundai Venue being the most dangerous car in terms of its past fatalities per miles driven and accidents and all is not that surprising. Where it got more interesting was the second through like whatever. Well, all the rest of the list to me is pretty interesting. The second most dangerous car in terms of this stat that we're looking at was the Chevrolet Corvette. Now, that's not necessarily a small car, and it certainly isn't an inexpensive car like the Venue was, but it's a car that has a lot of performance capability, and maybe it appeals to a certain demographic that maybe isn't quite got the reflexes to manage the car as quite carefully as they should. So that I thought was interesting, because number third was the Mitsubishi Mirage, heading right back to the Venue thing, right? The small, inexpensive car that is up against physics when it gets hit by a bigger car. And then number four, Porsche 911. We whipsawed right back to the Chevrolet Corvette, but this is the Porsche, Porsche's car from Germany. It's like the German Corvette. Again, a relatively probably higher average age of people driving these, maybe not having the reflexes to keep the cars under proper control at all times. And I'll just go through a few more here. The Honda CR-V Hybrid, interesting that it was the hybrid, but the CR-V Hybrid was 5. The Tesla Model Y was 6. And then Mitsubishi Mirage G4 was 7. The Buick Encore GX was 8. The Kia Forte was 9. And the Buick Envision was 10. And we have all 23 at the site. So you can see all 23 of them if you go to our website. And how they made the list was there was the average, which was 2.8 fatality rate. That's the average of all cars. And then everything that was twice that or higher was the top 23 cars. So I can tell you the last car on the list that barely made it at 5.6 was the Toyota Venza.
And that's interesting. The Venza doesn't. I don't know. So we have basically two categories. We have really cheap entry-level cars, and we have sports cars, I guess, are the...
That's a lot of... Yeah, if you kind of decided those... I mean, it's interesting, the Ford Bronco and then the Bronco Sport, which aren't even really the same car, as we know, right? They have the same name, but they're totally different chassis and like that. But the Bronco is number 17, and the Bronco Sport is number 18. So I thought that was fascinating that those two are right next to each other. But as I say in the study, you know, there's a Karl Brauer quoted multiple times in this study.
Wow.
if you read it.
Wow.
And what I tried to make clear was most of these vehicles have received excellent safety ratings, performing well in crash tests at the IHS and NHTSA. So it's not a vehicle design issue. The models on this list likely reflect a combination of driver behavior and driving conditions, leading to increased crashes and fatalities. And I really believe that. I don't think any of these cars are unsafe. I think there's more or less prudent or lack of prudence by some of the drivers of these cars is okay. What I would say.
Huh. Yeah. That's interesting.
I have a fatality in one of my cases in a Corvette, and rolled over off of the freeway, the 15, on the way back from Vegas.
On the way back from Vegas. So maybe.
And was he an older guy? Was it like a single car thing? It wasn't really. What was it?
No, he was 22.
Oh, wow.
So he was inexperienced with the car.
Okay.
Yeah. What's a 22-year-old doing in a Corvette?
He was a Turo rental. He had it for 24 hours. He took his girlfriend up to Vegas and drove back to California. And that's when it happened at night. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well,
Just like older guys who may or may not have as good a reflexes, younger guys who have great reflexes, but maybe not as much prudence and wisdom and restraint. Neither of those are good in a high performance car.
Exactly. And I also see, you know, in Teslas, people not understanding, especially the first few times they're in the vehicle, how powerful it is, and that they need to ease up on acceleration and understand when you're backing up, especially, I don't know. I seem to have a lot of these backup cases with Teslas.
People are backing up and
they're backing up and having accidents. Yeah.
They drive off a pier backwards or something.
Well, they'll back out of a driveway and hit someone coming because they're going too fast.
What about cross traffic assist or whatever that's called?
Well, there you go. They shouldn't be in any accidents.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's I was surprised. The Tesla Model S is number 21 and the Model Y, as I said, was number 6. And then, you know, we broke it out by brand too. And the worst brand, we had like the top 13 brands, and the worst brand was, sorry, we have the top 5 brands. The worst brand was Tesla on the accident fatality rate when you grouped them things by brand. And again, I don't think the Teslas are built lacking safety. I think they're very strong bodies and all. And you heard Elon bragging about how when they tried to do the roof crush thing on his cars, it broke the machine that was trying to crush the roof. So I think the cars are very strong and sturdy and safe, but I don't know how many people are properly leveraging the technology. No, the full self-driving, which isn't really full self-driving, and things like you were just discussing, Michelle, maybe assuming, well, no one can be coming because my thing's not screaming at me at all. And it's like, well, if a car's coming fast, it's not going to have time to warn you before you've backed out of a driveway onto a busy street and gotten hit. If you come out fast and the car's coming down the street fast. So yeah, I think user error is why a lot of the vehicles and the brands show up on this list at our website. But go to iccars.com. That's SEE, like you see, iccars.com, and look for the most dangerous car study. And you can see all the gory details.
All right.
Oh, okay.
And that's Carl Brower.
Carl Brower, senior analyst at iccars.com, among many other items on a spectacular CV. Thank you, Carl. Next, let's go, since we are telling you about, we are in the midst of the biggest transition in automotive history. The cars have been out, what, 120 years or how long? Maybe more than that. 130 years, 125 years. What is that? A sesquicentennial? No, that's 150 years. There's a word that means 125, and I didn't take Latin, even though I grew up Catholic and did attend Catholic school for 1 year before being pulled from it. Let's not get off on another tangent here. Honda is finally, because what we've gone through this electric car transition. Remember the very first electric car was the GM. The Impact was the concept car. And then after that was, what was it, Carl? The GM?
EV1.
EV1, that's right. That thing had a lead acid battery. Those were terrible. They were heavy. They had no energy density, really. When we tested the first one with lead acid batteries, we did a couple runs down the drag strip, and then we flatbedded it across to where our slalom place was, and we got one run in each direction, and it was just dead. That was a lead acid EV1. They came up later with nickel metal hydride, which was a chemistry that Honda also liked, I believe, and Toyota still, I think, uses it in one or two of their hybrid vehicles, nickel metal hydride. Now the world is, everything seems to have lithium ion batteries. What is next is possibly solid state batteries. And just recently, Honda R&D started a production demonstrator. So it's like a factory making solid state batteries. It's almost 300,000 square feet of floor space. It has equipment on site that can verify each step of the operation. Honda says it's gearing up to start solid state battery production on site in January. So next month, literally next month. Now, we don't know that these, you know, how far off these will, it is before we'll see these in production cars, but Honda's direction for its solid state battery cells is targeting a roll press technique. So basically these things come off in a big sheet, and from that you have electrode material on it sent through a press, combines a coating, and they are working toward making a solid state battery. Which, does anybody understand exactly what a solid state battery is, how that works, what it is?
Why no, Mark? Why don't you tell us?
please do tell, Mark.
Well, solid state battery right now.
As he's Googling it.
I'm Googling this on the screen. A solid state battery is, one moment, a battery that uses a solid electrolyte to move lithium ions between electrodes instead of the liquid or gel electrolytes in conventional batteries. They have several several advantages over lithium ion batteries. So they have greater energy density, greater durability, faster charging rate, longer lifespan, and the shape. They can make them into various shapes that lithium ion batteries cannot attain. And they have better energy storage. Solid state batteries can store more energy in the same volume as lithium ion batteries because they use a lithium metal anode. Remember, there's a cathode and an anode, and that is more energy dense. So, you know, it could be the next big thing, the solid state battery, and Honda is working hard. And we want you to work hard, too, to support us here at KPFK by contributing. Please make your generous donation to kpfk.org or call up 818-985-5735 to keep this show and many other shows on the air. How else are you going to know about what a solid state battery is and how far off it is? We just told you it's coming in. They're starting production in January, are these things. Granted, on a very limited basis, but, you know, this could be the next big thing, and we are keeping you aware of it. This is just one of the many shows on KPFK that keeps you informed and gives you information that you might not otherwise find. So please make a generous donation to keep us on the air. We want to get rid of the old Soviet era vacuum tube transmitter that we have up on top of Mount Wilson. We want to get, maybe it's a solid state unit, who knows, something really good. And we need your support to do it. Your financial support, your generous donations will be greatly appreciated here at kpfk.org or by calling 818-985-5735. If you do it now, the car show gets credit for it. And so you'll be doing your part to support what I hope you find a fun and informative show. And we are going to keep trying to do that. That's the end of our news section, right? Right, guys? We're going to move on to car reviews.
Well, yeah, we're out of time. We have to have reviews. So who's up?
Carl. Carl, I think, is going to be our guy. Carl, as if you remember on his long list of curriculum vitae or resume, Carl is also on a couple of Car of the Year boards, and he participates in that. And as such, he gets to drive a lot of very interesting cars. I think let's start with the Volkswagen, Carl.
Let's start with the Volkswagen. And, you know, there was a show recently, the Los Angeles Auto Show. I'm sure you guys have already talked about it on previous KPFK radio shows here. But one of the most important cars, I think, that was shown at that show, not maybe the most sexy or the most interesting because it wasn't a whiz-bang new EV, it was just another compact SUV, you know, the best-selling segment. But the Volkswagen Tiguan, the all-new for 2025 Volkswagen Tiguan, debuted at that LA show a couple weeks ago. And I was highly impressed because we also had it at the World Car of the Year testing. And I was hopping in and out of like 12 different cars over the course of 3 days, driving the different candidates to make sure I could vote with authority on which one should win. And I got into the Tiguan kind of thinking what maybe a lot of people are already thinking. It's like, yeah, here's, it's the Volkswagen CRV / RAV4, whatever, great. And I got in it and started driving it, and I was instantly quite impressed and felt like this is a car that's going to really do good things for both Volkswagen and probably the segment. First of all, it's got a ginormous center touchscreen. And I think it comes standard with 12.9-inch, which is not small. And it's got an optional 15-inch center touchscreen. And that's about as big as you can get right now. And it's just really well positioned. And probably most exciting is it was quite intuitive and easy to use. If you have used recent Volkswagen interfaces in some of their recent cars, like the ID4 and some of the other ones, let's just say that some people, myself included, weren't happy with the interface. Well, I think Volkswagen was getting a lot of feedback on this, and this all-new Tiguan has an all-new interface and on a ginormous screen. And the combination makes for this very just cool, easy, high-tech environment inside the car that I really liked. And there was also all this great ambient lighting in there too. It's just funny. You think about it, it's like, this is a car too. You really care so much about the screen and the ambient lighting. You do if they're well executed. And I was surprised how those two elements of the car transformed my driving experience. Like, man, I want to drive this car because it has great kind of soothing and ambient lighting going on all around me. And it's got this great screen that's easy to use.
I saw the car. They did a press preview at the outside of the LA Auto Show at some place in downtown LA. And I got to play around with that. They have one of those rotary dial controllers that on any other car would control the radio, the nav, it would control the ride mode, everything. This one, it controlled the ambient lighting and I think the volume on the audio. And that was it. It seemed like such a waste of a knob. They're going to go to
no,
all
no,
that
no. I don't know if you drove it or not, Mark.
I did not drive it, no.
That knob is really cool because it's in the center, like between, you're talking about the one, I think it was down in the center console area, right? Like between the seats. No, if you push on it, Mark, it scrolls through like seven things that it can do.
Okay.
You push on it and it's, so I forgot about this. I'm glad you brought this up. So it's not just got like this high-tech screen. It's got like this high-tech knob. The knob is what you would think it is. It's a digital, it's a knob that you would turn like a volume knob, but it's kind of big. But there's a screen on it. There's a little display screen in the knob. And when you push on it, it changes different control things. And it tells you what it's doing now as you're pushing on it. A very innovative ergonomic design in my mind, because it's like, oh, what do I want this knob to do now? And there's like seven options. And it's easy to know which one you've picked because it shows you on the top of the knob as it's changing functionality. So I was highly impressed. I also think the car looks good from the outside. It's got plenty of power. You know, Volkswagen continues to use their kind of German heritage in terms of suspension and steering design or steering feel. And both those were good. The car handled and drove well, too.
What, doesn't it also go from three rows to two rows?
Yes.
The previous Tiguan, three rows, and this one is just two.
Two. Yeah, they lost the three-row thing, which really ends up meaning that you probably have a more functional both cargo area and second row. So I think they probably looked at Honda and Toyota and said, you know, they sell one or two CRVs and RAV4s every year, and those are just two-seat compact SUVs. Maybe we don't need to try to cram a third row back here.
Yeah, and when you do that with a car relatively small like that, you have a really cramped third row, even though it's mostly used for carpools with very small people back there.
Right.
So now if you want a three-row, you have to go to the VW Atlas, right?
Yeah, I think that's what they also feel like, is there's probably a pretty clear break between people who truly need three rows and people who truly need two rows. And they're better off serving each of them with one vehicle versus trying to blur the lines and have a bad small third row jammed into the Tiguan. And real quick, I've got the pricing here too. You know, I think the pricing is going to start, I don't know if they've finalized it, but it's a pretty solid estimate that's going to start around $31,000 for the base Tiguan S and then go up to probably mid-40s for like the top of the line SELR line with a plug-in hybrid thing. And that's another thing too, is there's a plug-in hybrid version of this coming. And anyone who knows me knows I'm a huge fan of plug-in hybrids. I feel like they are like the perfect car right now, you know, until we get our solid state batteries and a better infrastructure and more than, you know, 300 miles of dependable range. The idea that you can have an electric vehicle for somewhere between 30 and 60 miles, and then the engine fires up and you just keep going with no range anxiety, makes plug-ins very attractive to me.
Okay.
Yeah, and I agree. That's a good point.
Yeah, I liked it. I saw it it wasn't moving, as you know, I didn't get to drive it like you, but it did seem very comfortable. It seemed like the kind of thing you could own and just drive around forever and be very happy with your choice. But there are also, I don't know, by my latest count, 18 million other manufacturers offering a crossover utility vehicle of that size and shape. So it has a lot of competition.
It does. But that's why I think Volkswagen decided, you know, look, this is, I think it's the best selling segment now, right now in the US, is the compact SUV segment. And they just decided, we're not holding back. We're going all out. The size of the display screen, the, you know, really cool interior ergonomics and the atmosphere it creates with that great ambient lighting, the seating comfort, the driving dynamics. And I'm a big fan of the CRV and the RAV4. I think those are great. So it's not like I easily am impressed by this car, but I think we're going to see comparison tests coming across all the big media outlets for automotive. And it'll be very interesting to see how this Tiguan does against the kind of, you know, benchmark vehicles that have been around for years doing well in that segment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Let's go from the mass market car to a couple of things, two cars up at the top end of any segment. Which one do you want to start off with there? The Mercedes or the Porsche, Carl?
Oh gosh. Well, let's start with the Porsche, because that one was fascinating in that I drove the Panamera which is, you know, basically their four-door sports car. It's like, and it kind of even looks like a 911, but it's got an engine in the front and it's a V8 instead of a horizontally opposed six, like all the 911s have. But it's been around for 15 years, I want to say, for the Panamera. And it's an impressive car. It's always had a really good dynamics. It holds true to its Porsche nature and its heritage. But the new Panamera for 2025, I think the rest of the car line was redesigned for 24 or heavily updated for 24. And then this year, the new versions are the Turbo S E Hybrid. And that's the most powerful version, 771 horsepower. And then there's the GTS, which anyone who knows Porsche knows that's like a very popular trim on a lot of their models, their 911s and the Boxsters and the Caymans and the Macans, because it's like not quite pure turbo highest performance, but it's got a really great kind of mid-level of performance, suspension tuning and exterior kind of accents, dark accents, all that. The GTS is a very popular model line. So I drove both of them back to back and I was super impressed with the first thing I drove, which was the Turbo SE Hybrid, 771 horsepower, 0 to 60 in 2.8 seconds, kind of ridiculous. All-wheel drive, twin turbocharged V8, 4-liter engine combined with a hybrid drivetrain, standard all-wheel drive. It was fast, as you expect, and it even handled pretty well, despite weighing about 5,300 pounds, which is a pretty heavy vehicle that's not an SUV.
It is amazing how they can make things that are so big and heavy go so quickly. I just had the Hummer EV pickup truck, which weighs, I forget, it was 8,000 or 9,000 pounds, and it gets to 60 in 3 seconds, which is just absurd. So, yeah. Well, yeah, and they have so many different versions of that, Porsche does, of their Panamera. Yeah. And boy, it's hard to keep them all straight. So so you got to drive two of them, sounds like.
Yeah, and the Turbo SE Hybrid was like just what you said. It's like I'm looking at the curb like going, oh, and we got to go on to Angeles Crest highways where we were using to drive these things. So I was on the perfect road for going on corners. And I remember being like, wow, this thing hides its 5,300 pounds quite effectively, a very advanced adaptive suspension that'll counter lean in real time when the car wants to try to lean. Then I drove the GTS, which just has the same V8 4-liter twin turbocharged engine, but no hybrid drivetrain, which makes it weigh about 700 pounds less. It's like 4,500 pounds, and it costs about $75,000 less. It's $150,000. And it still does 0 to 60 in 3.6 seconds. So it's not really like a sleeper. It's not really like a laggard, you know, at 3.6 seconds. But I could immediately tail the lighter weight, and I loved the sound it was making. You know, the engine was kind of muted in the Turbo SE Hybrid, but it was not muted in the GTS. And it honestly, guys, it took me like 2 miles to drive, and it's like, yeah, this is the one I'd buy. I'd probably buy this one if they were the same price. The fact that it's $75,000 less, you can feel the 700 less pounds, as impressive as the Turbo SE Hybrid is, you feel the 700 lighter pounds on the GTS, and then the engine note was fabulous.
Carl, you famously have a 911, don't you? 911 Turbo. Are you going to trade that in for a Panamera Turbo SE Hybrid?
I would have thought that was impossible a couple of weeks ago, Mark. After driving that GTS sedan, it's like, boy, this thing's almost as fun as my 911, and it's got 4 doors and 2 full-size seats for practicality and all. But I'm still keeping my 2012 Turbo S because, if nothing else, it's got hydraulic assisted steering. And I think we've had this conversation before, Mark. It's hydraulic assisted steering or death for me in a sports car.
All right. Very good. How about electric power steering? Let's go to your other car that you drove back there. We'll go staying in Germany, but moving over to a different part of Stuttgart.
Yeah. Another crazy German electric car. This thing is just, it's kind of silly. So first of all, the G-Wagon
it's the electric G-Wagon G580 is what we're talking about, right?
Exactly. And, you know, the regular G-Wagon has already been, you know, one of these cars where, you know, it carries such a, in my opinion, burden with it in terms of the image it has, the type of people who buy those and drive them and all. It's like the ridiculousness of really capable off-road SUVs that never go off-road, which there are like dozens of, but this is like the nth one. Like, it's the most crazy one. And now there's an electric version, and that's what I drove. And like every one of these things, like you said, Mark, they weigh a lot. They're just heavy, heavy vehicles. And driving this thing, I was just kind of like, I don't know what the kind of purpose of this is, but it makes 579 horsepower, and it's got the all-wheel drive. I think it's got like 859 pound-feet of torque. So it does 0 to 60 in like a crazy low number. And it can do crazy things like spin on its own axis. It'll actually have the wheels on each side of it turn opposite directions.
Is so that I thought that was just something like, that they did as a trick, but they're not doing it in a production car. So production cars offer that spinning around option. Wow.
You have to hit like four buttons and be in like, you know, and turn the wheel all the way to one side. Or actually, no, you hold the wheel straight. That's right. You have to hold the steering wheel straight, which is so weird. So you're fighting your desire to turn the wheel to make the car turn. And instead of that, you hold the wheel straight and it turns sharper than you've ever had a vehicle turn.
Does it have to be on dirt to do that?
No, it'll do it on pavement. It'll do on pavement.
It'll only do it like tires.
Yeah, well, it'll only do it like twice, you know, because they feel like, okay, if you're doing it more than twice, you're not doing this for like, you know, because you ran into a dead end in a parking garage. You're doing it because you're trying to be goofball and impress your neighbors and stuff and all. But yeah, it weighs almost 7,000 pounds and it's just takes the ridiculousness of the G-Wagon in general and takes it to an nth degree with all this technology and the crazy maneuvers it'll do. All that said, you know, did I enjoy driving it and sitting up so high and having it handle way better than I thought it should and go faster than I thought it should? Yeah, I did. It's just like, okay, I don't want to like this car, but it was kind of goofy and also really fun.
What did you say the prices were for these?
He didn't.
Did they have a price for it?
Well, I think, aren't they usually like $300,000 or something like that?
No, it's not actually. It's much cheaper. It starts at $162,000, and I think you can make them cost like $190,000 if you get all the options and stuff on them.
That's downright reasonable. Yeah, $162,650 for the Edition One model. Oh, the Edition One model is priced at $179,750. Nice. Wow. Yeah.
Well, I mean, at that place, pick up two. I mean, come on, right?
Yeah, pick up his and hers.
Right. Yeah. I can't wait to see the Kardashians doing crab walking in those.
Oh, you know? I hope to get through the show without mentioning the K word, but yeah, we've done it. I feel dumber now that you mentioned that, which I didn't think was possible for me, but oh my. Those G-Wagons, the ones you see in Hollywood, they all have wild colors, fluorescent orange, fluorescent green. What did they have good colors there when the ones that you were driving?
There was only one. It was there for world car testing, and it was the crazy color of white. So yeah, it was pretty dang basic. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
so those others were almost wraps.
We're almost out of time here. We ask you, please, while you still have a moment, call us and donate whatever you can to keep KPFK going strong. Call 818-985-5735 or go to kpfk.org and help us out, please. Yeah. Michelle, why don't you tell us about our social media page and then we'll get out of here.
Of course. Well, first of all, thank you so much, Carl, for your reviews and your input on the show today. If you'd like to follow us, we are on Facebook at The Car Show on KPFK at 90.7 FM.
Okay, and we will see you next week. Stick around for Rhapsody in Black with Bill Garner. Great music you didn't know you love. That's the slogan I gave to his show. It's maybe not what he uses, but it's true. It's good stuff. And please donate to KPFK. And we'll see you next week on The Car Show.
What's a radio?
A radio? That's the thing in the car where we hear the news and music while we drive you to school.
So a radio's a part of a car?
No. I mean, yes, it can be part of a car, but you can get radios by themselves. A radio is like your phone, but you just listen to it. You don't talk to it.
But I like talking on the phone.
But it's very important to listen sometimes. You can learn a lot from the radio. Your mom and I like to listen to KPFK. It gives us a lot of information we don't hear on other radio stations. Plus, they also play lots of really cool music.
Daddy, could I please get a radio? I'd like to start learning things and hear cool music.
Sure, we could talk about getting you your own radio.
Great! I'd like a radio that comes in an electric blue Tesla.
Radio first, car later. We've got to get you started listening to KPFK.
You can help keep KPFK on air by making your donation at kpfk.org or kpfk.org or by calling 818-985.